You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, my beautiful listeners. It's morning in America again. Today, I'll continue with some of Gerwinder's useful concepts. We'll talk about human nature. We'll talk about the two genders we have in America as of today. He got a standing ovation for that, saying that there were two genders in America. That'll give you an idea of how dark things have gotten over the last several years. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't first talk about what's happening in our great nation as we speak. So let's start there, and I'll wrap up with Gerwinder and kids say the darndest things. Who knew Republicans would be so excited about electing a progressive president? Think about it. All the things Trump is talking about doing are very progressive, whether it's the Panama Canal, Greenland, renaming the Gulf of Mexico, an external revenue service, which is genius, by the way. I'll talk more about that in a minute. I'll talk about what I consider genius moves on the part of Trump. And probably my personal favorite was declaring the Mexican drug cartels as terrorist organizations, which means we can now wipe them off the face of the earth. Living in this timeline is wild. I'm sure you saw where the big guy pardoned all his family members. Big guy was, of course, the nickname Hunter Biden gave his dad when they were making millions selling influence to the Chinese. The Chinese, of all places, doing corruption with China, who is our sworn enemy. So naturally, he had to pardon Fauci, who was also working with the Chinese, and General Milley, who said that he was going to warn China if Trump did anything untoward, which is probably treason, right? I'm not a lawyer, but I do know treason is punishable by death. So if what Fauci did or what Liz Cheney and them did was treason, Adam Schiff, then the head of the Biden crime family spared their lives, basically, and they should feel forever indebted to the big guy. He has made Don Corleone look like your average run-of-the-mill mob guy. But thank God nationalism is back. Thank God common sense is back. Without nationalism, it would not be long before we were conquered. Americans in 100 years will open a history book and come to learn how our enemies in China, they play the long game. They tried to defeat a whole generation of young people in our country to accelerate depopulation. Our young people aren't reproducing enough. While at the same time, shipping precursors for fentanyl to Mexico so the drug cartels could send it through the border and kill tens of thousands of Americans every year. A country that's playing the long game is they could be getting revenge for what happened in the 19th century, the Opium Wars, when the West, primarily Britain, got 10% of the Chinese population hooked on drugs. That's how Britain ended up with Hong Kong for 150 years. A lot of people don't know that. And who knows what the Chinese did with regard to COVID? I'm sure all that evidence has been destroyed. If it wasn't destroyed then, if it wasn't destroyed immediately, then certainly in the interim there between November 5th and January 20th. You want more progressivism? Trump is saying the official policy of the United States is that there are two genders. And he got a standing ovation. It's unbelievable. Remember Ketanji Brown Jackson, the Supreme Court justice? You know, during her Supreme Court nomination hearing, she said that she couldn't say what a woman was because she wasn't a professional biologist. We have learned so much about human nature over the past decade, haven't we? And by we, I mean the great unwashed, us, the unwashed masses. Something I talked about last episode is how many people walking among us have revealed themselves to be evil, to be total pieces of you-know-what. And it's exactly who you'd expect if you'd ever read a history book. It's the Marxists. Read the Communist Manifesto. You will quickly learn that in Marxist theory, all of history is the development of class conflict over time. Oppressor versus oppressed. That's how Marxists view society through the lens of this oppressed versus oppressor idea. And that a socialist revolution is what's going to put an end to the oppression. Of course, you can't call it a socialist revolution. Americans would never voluntarily elect a socialist to office. Actually, no communist regime has ever come to power claiming to be communist either. So what happens when you get feminine men and batshit cuckoo women in power? Well, you've got to watch what they do and not what they say. It's the same in real life for you young kings out there listening. If you're dealing with women in a dating context, don't give half as much weight to what a woman says versus what she does. Remember, man, women weren't raised as you were. Just as an example, no woman is taught, be a woman of your word. No, if her feelings change, so will her words. You might secure a date for Friday night with her on a Wednesday, but if her feelings change in the interim there, in the 48 hours between Wednesday and Friday, she might just be washing her hair on Friday night instead of going out with you. You might find this story funny. I had a girl who broke up with me one time. I must have been about 24. And she decided she didn't want to continue seeing me, which it was a girl I met at the gym. And she was some sort of fitness model back when that meant something. She was probably 7 years older than me. I think she was 31. And I didn't have near enough money for her. That was the sense I got at the time. But we went out for sushi one night. And it's probably our first formal date, you could call it. Because if you're 24 and going on dinner dates, that's kind of a big deal, right? You're spending 10% of your paycheck on a dinner. Well, at dinner, my stomach started murmuring and swirling. And I said, excuse me. I excused myself, threw my napkin on the table, and I was in a hurry. And I didn't make it to the toilet. I was blowing chunks all in the hallway. Chunks, I was vomiting. Chunks isn't a dude. Quit that. I'm telling a story here. And I had vomit all over my clothes. So she offers to take me to her place. And I had food poisoning all in her bathroom. I made use of her toilet and bathtub at the same time. And afterward, I needed a change of clothes. So she let me borrow her ex-boyfriend's scrubs. It was a terrible experience. Anyway, it was probably less than a week later, she said that she didn't think it would work out between us. And I was like, okay, well, but I'm curious, well, why do you think that is? Because we enjoyed working out together. We'd go out to eat afterward, a lot of laughs. I thought things were going pretty good. I figured it was an age thing. And she was pretty pretentious. I got the sense that she was after money, just some of the comments she made. You know what she told me? Three words I still remember like it was yesterday. She shrugged and said, girls are fickle. And I love that response. I still do. Because remember, gents, you win or you learn. And if your emotions are involved, what you learn is more likely to resonate. You're more likely to remember something if it has emotional impact. Has it ever been said about you that you don't have emotions? I'm sure that's happened to some of you. It's definitely happened to me. But what I came to realize is that's an accusation that'll only come from a person who struggles to control their emotions. Because I've always said you should strive for your emotions to be as educated as your intellect. And I've written on the blog that it's emotional qualities that separate high-value individuals from mediocre men. So when you get accused of not having emotions, knowing how much work you've put into processing your emotions and channeling your emotions toward productive ends, it's like, get out of here. You don't know what you're talking about. You remember that woman in HR that I told you about in a prior episode out of San Francisco? The type for which the C word was created, that might help you remember. This was a job at the time that I wanted, and I was prepared to accept. We had talked money, stock options, everything. It was all but a done deal. It was on the 1 yard line. I liked and respected the guy that I was going to be working for. The guy who recruited me was a stud, a guy by the name of Brady Beal. He helped me prep for the presentation they had me give on their product, and it impressed them. And like I said, we were almost done on the 1 yard line. And this awful, who didn't like me from hello for whatever reason, one of the things I remember her telling me was, we really need somebody in this role who's a self-starter. And I don't even know what to say, because in my mind or in my life, I might be able to find somebody more driven than me, but it might take a while. So anyway, that's what that reminded me of. If you wondered why character and integrity are no longer qualities we revere or haven't revered through this dark era we just lived through, look no further than who's been running the show these past several years. I want to talk about the External Revenue Service. Who thought of that? Well, we can't be sure, right? But what we do know is President Trump has a tremendous intellect, which has allowed him to attract the brightest minds in America. So this time around, he's surrounded by high intellects. You can't attract high intellects unless you have one yourself. And that's why, in my opinion, we witnessed probably the best political campaign in history. I can't even think of any glaring mistakes. And the offense they played was stellar. What we saw was God-tier political instincts over the past 6 months or so. It's really been incredible. I reckon their meeting of the minds, like literally when they get into a room together, they must generate a Lollapalooza effect of smart ideas. And of course, Trump gets all the credit because he listens and takes their advice into consideration and then decides whether that idea is going to see the light of day. Yeah, who knew getting the smartest people in America to work together as a team to help the country would turn out to be the best thing any country could do ever. Trump's inner circle is a bunch of guys who got uber wealthy by making the right bets on the future, which could be described another way as genius political instincts. But let me give you a few examples of what I'm talking about. So the Trump coin. All I'll say on that is its genius will be revealed by the time he leaves office. Or how about the effect that just the threat of tariffs has had before he even takes office? Or probably my favorite genius move was the negotiating gambit he pulled off. And this was all Trump. He said, "I don't want to interfere with negotiations, but if it isn't done by the time I take office," he was talking about Hamas releasing American hostages. He said, "If they aren't released by the time I take office, all hell will break loose." And then what, 2 days before he takes office, they strike a deal? If you have studied negotiating at all, you know that was genius. "I don't want to interfere with negotiations, but if they're not out by the time I become president, all hell will break loose." Who has those instincts? One of the things I've hated to see through this dark period we just lived through is when inferior people hold so much power over people who are so much better than them. I'm thinking of, well, let's go back to the Kavanaugh hearing, where they brought some awful from California, the Dr. Jill type, that might be coming to an end too, hopefully, referring to people like Jill Biden as doctor. Anyway, they got this awful to perform the role of someone who'd been raped by Kavanaugh 35 years earlier. And she was a pretty good actor. Not good enough to keep Kavanaugh from the Supreme Court, but convincing to those who don't know what acting looks like. They don't know what tells to look for. Although I do realize much of it is just team play. Blue no matter who. Head on, queen. They don't care if you're telling the truth. The ends justify the means, girl boss. Get up there. Act your ass off. There are a lot of people in this world who just aren't good at discerning bullshit. They can't tell when somebody's acting. Oh, that was also the first look that people got at Kamala Harris, the Kavanaugh hearing. If you're looking for cringe, check out that clip on the YouTubes. I remember she asked Kavanaugh, she said, "Would you be willing to ask the White House to direct the FBI to conduct investigations into the accusations of sexual assault against you?" Now, granted, he had already passed an FBI background check. So what was he going to say? "Yes, Kamala, I'd love to spend a lot of my time being further investigated as the FBI chases ghosts from 35 years ago." And I remember he tried to answer, but she cut him off and said, "I'll take that as a no," which we saw recently in this most recent hearing, right? They tried to get you to say yes or no so they could take you out of context and fry you and Nobody took the bait. Those nominees of Trump's seem very seasoned. A lot of them have television experience. That helps. Wouldn't it be easier if evil announced itself as evil before you had to deal with it? Unfortunately, humans don't work that way. That's how we get Luigi's in New York City or Ted Bundy's. People are more likely to say, I'm a murderer, than they are, I'm a communist. You can only hope to get better at reading people by studying human nature, which is a very worthwhile thing to study, human nature. Because unlike the communists who rewrite history, human nature doesn't change. Another example would be the Pete Hegseth hearing. When somebody like Pocahontas has a say over whether you're confirmed, I hate that. Did you see how condescending she was to somebody who is probably, 100 times better than she is? I hope we put an end to that. Merit is making a comeback. And so many people are now wide awake to what's been happening in the West. Might need to co-opt the term woke, right? The same way Trump co-opted fake news. You remember that? Hillary Clinton was on her blame tour following her 2016 election loss. And I want to say it made the top 10 list of excuses for her. She said what propelled Trump to victory was this new epidemic of fake news. She said that the proliferation of fake news stories has real-world consequences. So he co-opted it. That's where it came from. Did any of you see Russian propaganda in your social media feeds in 2016? I didn't. And I'm spotting propaganda as one of my strong suits. Anyway, so yeah, Trump was like, fake news. I got your fake news. Without people believing the fake news propagated by CNN and all the other three-letter networks, she wouldn't have come within smelling distance of the presidency. So fake news will now forever be associated with the attempted revolution, which has achieved a lot of its objectives. But we're coming back. There's a reason we're taught that if you don't learn history, you're bound to repeat it. But maybe all the folks in the modern rainbow coalition are well-versed in Marxist theory. No, they're not. I'd give $1,000 to every leftist who could tell me what the Holodomor was in Ukraine or what that was about without Googling. I don't think they could do it. You think they've read Solzhenitsyn? No chance. So it'll happen again. Did you see where the comedian Shane Gillis joked about how the more you learn about World War II, the more Republican you become? There's probably some truth in that. But over the last several years in the Western world, we got an ugly glimpse of how easy it is to pit different demographics against each other in this oppressor-oppressed dynamic. Whether it was black-white or trans-hetero, rich versus poor, the middle class versus entrenched elitist bureaucrats. Israel-Palestine is seen through this oppressed-oppressor narrative. People of color versus people who lack color, which that would be me, right? Lacking color. The patriarchy, LGBTQD, plus a few other leftists they tried to group into a dedicated voting bloc. I'm sure you noticed all their discrimination against white men by way of DEI. That had them reeling at the end there. They realized that they left out a large segment of voters, because white people still make up something like 69% of the electorate. So they're like, we've managed to convince all the useful idiots to join a voting bloc except white men. So what'd they do in their desperation? White Dudes for Harris, which if anybody has access to a White Dudes for Harris tee, could you send that to me? If anyone knows how to get one, let me know. If you want to gift me one, I'll be your best friend. What they didn't realize in all their profound wisdom was that they already had the gay vote, making White Dudes for Harris redundant. People are finally realizing, too, that our universities are just overpriced indoctrination centers for America's youth. indoctrinating students into a leftist worldview that is destructive to society. And professors, of course, are overwhelmingly leftist. One of the reasons I'm convinced we got to this point is the lack of shame in our country. You know, the Japanese, their society is basically run on shame. And that's something we don't have at all. Shame isn't even a part of our political discourse. That's how you get all the gaslighting. People seem not to care that they're on video saying the opposite of what they're saying now. No, getting caught in a lie is no longer shameful for these people. I think shame and maybe grief are the toughest emotions to process, possibly. And we know that these people, these gaslighters I'm talking about, have become experts in blocking out unwanted emotion, protecting their emotional life at all costs. It's why they try to cancel people who say things that they don't like. Because the words that are spoken that they have to hear would give them, or even read, would give them an emotion that they don't want. And sadly, many young people have been raised to be ultra-sensitive nowadays. The old sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That was one of the most valuable children's rhymes that we used to teach kids. But in all this darkness we've had, with all the wokeness, that phrase got flipped to where overly sensitive kids go looking for words to be offended by, often interpreting them in a way that allows them to have some victimhood. It might not even be them. There's a lot of times offended on behalf of someone else, which I talked about last episode. It's been a race to see who could be the most victimized. Did you happen to see the survey on Ivy League campuses where they asked whether students were straight or gay? Princeton had the smallest amount of gays, but even they were in the 20% range. Columbia in New York City, 40%. 2 in 5 said they were gay or lesbian. Now, why do you suppose that is? I have a theory. It's the only way for some young people to get in the game, to compete in the Victim Olympics. If you weren't born into a protected class, claiming homosexuality is the only way you can join a team, to join a group that, you know, a team you can make. And that one's easy to join because it's non-falsifiable, meaning nobody can prove you're not gay. You can't say, come on, dude, I know you're not taking it in the can, because then will that be asshole? No pun intended. By the way, this is also why you see so many Hollywood types with tranny kids, which is further proof that wokeness is a mind virus. I mean, think about it, but what victim group could Charlize Theron join or Naomi Watts? None. There are no groups for them. They'd be completely shut out of the Victim Olympics. Wouldn't even make the Olympic trials, the Victim Olympic trials. One of these Hollywood women turned all 3 of her kids trans. Who was that? Megan Fox. Charlize Theron said in an interview one time, she said, she knew her kid was trans when he was 3. He or she was 3. She said, she looked me in the eye at 3 years old and said, Mommy, I'm not a boy. And there you go. Those are her words as she explained it. Let's hope one of Megan Fox's kids doesn't tell her she's a mermaid, because, God, we might have one of those Andrea Yates situations on our hands. You remember her, the woman in Clear Lake? She drowned her kids in the bathtub. That was awful. Happened in 02. Clear Lake is a suburb of Houston, southeast of Houston. That's why I remember that. But since we're on the topic of gender and emotions, how many of you men have ever taken longer than your dinner date to decide what you want from the menu? My wife and I have probably shared 1,000 meals at a restaurant. She has never once made a decision on what she's going to eat before I do. Not once. Do you know why that is? And I'll share. Similar to shame, they're trying their best to guard against the unwanted emotion that making the wrong decision might bring. Back before COVID, this is an interesting story. It seems like a past life, but before COVID, I would take small groups around Central and Eastern Europe, and we'd start in Prague and hop on a train down to Vienna and cross the river to Bratislava, and then they'd fly home from Budapest. And I didn't get to do it much, but One time, well, I had to stop doing it altogether when COVID came along. But I'll never forget one morning we were in Budapest and I was taking them to eat breakfast. And one of the few negatives about Budapest is that they don't have a lot of breakfast spots to eat. But the first morning after we got there, I picked a place and it was kind of frou-frou, like they served avocado toast and other pretentious sort of yuppie dishes. And one of the guys came up to me afterward as we were leaving, and he said that the main guy, the one who had gotten everybody together and basically paid for the trip, paid for everything, very successful businessman back in the States. He said, let's call him Mr. Businessman. He said, Mr. Businessman didn't like the restaurant you chose. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but I was thinking, so what? You know, he was telling me that he was disappointed in the restaurant choice. Like, I don't give a shit. Now, contrast that with your average woman or white dude for Harris. He'd be devastated that not everybody was happy, right? Especially the main guy. It would have the potential to ruin their day. They actually might go over to the guy and apologize and try to make it right. But you can't make it right, right? What's done is done. So what are you going to do? So you should never, long story longer, you should never get mad at your woman for not being as decisive as you. We ended up having a great trip. It was not that big a deal. The guy who told me that made it sound like a big deal. But this whole conflation of the sexes and push for quote-unquote equity, a bullshit word that only a commie could come up with, living through all that had people believing that men and women are the same, which only further frustrates people in relationships. If you can do everything a man can do, then make a freaking decision. As if relations with humans aren't hard enough as it is. When you confuse the gender roles, it only exacerbates the downfall of intergender dynamics. Because women and men are not the same. Stop trying to make them the same. Women are in tune to emotional currents that we masculine types can't even fathom. Like, we can't access those same emotional currents. So don't ask your woman where she wants to eat. Ask her to guess where you're going to eat. And whatever she guesses, say, no way. That is exactly what I was thinking. And take her there. Because in all likelihood, you don't give a shit where you eat. We don't have to deal with the consequences of making the wrong decision. There's zero chance that making the wrong decision would ruin our day. And for ladies, that is not so. But I was saying that in the same way that Japan runs on shame, America runs on guilt, which is a powerful tool that manipulators use to gain power over you. I can't tell you how many times I've helped women see that someone who tries to make you feel guilty isn't a good person. That if you wouldn't do that to someone, attempt to make them feel guilty, then don't allow somebody to do it to you. You get to decide how much weight to give someone's opinion. So if I lined three people in front of you and said, person A is a genuine person, she has strong values, everybody loves her. And then person B, he's a man of integrity, strong character. And then person C over here, she's manipulative. She acts like the world revolves around her and how she's feeling on any particular day. We all know those people. And when she's really feeling bad, it's usually on holidays, right? When the families gather together to have a good time. But she's always plotting to get people to take her side in the chronic beefs that she has with people. And person C, you know, they'll try to start beef with you, trying to make you feel some type of way, as the kids say, but you can't allow that. And this would be a good reason to have educated emotions, because you want to get to a point where you're completely unaffected, get to a place in life where you can laugh at the person trying to manipulate you, where you can smile and say, oh, that is so cute. And she's like, what's cute? Just the way you scrunch your nose, you know, when you're upset. So then maybe she'll think you're an asshole, which is okay. Not everybody's going to like you. Besides, she's probably just pissed that you can see through her annex. That, or she's jealous that you have the emotional intelligence she lacks. I mean, who wouldn't want to be incapable of manipulation? So let them think you're an a-hole. who doesn't have emotions. Better than being manipulative. Give her daps and say, nice try, Toots, but I happen to be impervious to your brand of bullshit. Actually, I wouldn't say anything. Better to remain entirely unaffected and keep on keeping on so they can move on and try to manipulate somebody else. Because that's their nature. They're not going to stop. The best indication of whether or not someone will behave in a certain way is whether they've behaved that way before. It's human nature. Study human nature and you'll know that expecting a manipulative person to not be manipulative makes you stupid. And don't be stupid. Nobody wants to be stupid. That reminds me of the litmus test that I like to give somebody who criticizes me or my work. And the best heuristic I've come up with for handling those sorts of situations is to ask myself, would I hire this person? And if not, then I'm not even taking their opinion into consideration. Why would you ever allow a lesser person to steal even 5 minutes of your headspace? For me, I value my time and attention too much for that. I really hope DEI dies. I believe Trump is putting an end to it. Meta, McDonald's, Lowe's, a whole bunch of companies got rid of DEI entirely before Trump even took office. I am so tired of lesser people having so much power over people who are so much better than them. And that's a symptom of DEI. I mean, Pocahontas should never, ever have a say on whether someone the caliber of Pete Hegseth gets confirmed for a cabinet position. It's only a declining society that would permit some notorious phony to be a decision maker over whether somebody gets an important leadership position. That is asinine. The way they condescend to people who are better than them, they probably wouldn't do it if that person weren't so much better than them. That shit has to stop. It's everywhere. The Leslie Stahl types, or the ladies on The View, Sonny Hostin, Joy Behar, the way they talk down to people is so cringy. But we're bringing merit back. Much of that will end, hopefully. It's a childish way of behaving. I don't know, speaking of Leslie Stahl, I don't know if you saw her interview with Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon is probably the foremost voice in economics in the world, in America, certainly, maybe the world, at least the most credible. And Stahl tried to get him to poo-poo tariffs, exposing herself as a dummy in the process, of course, but that's how it starts. Who are interviewed need to expose propagandists who don't know what they're talking about. Anybody with any economic sense knows all the tariff talk is a negotiating gambit. But as I said a few weeks ago, it's not going to occur to somebody who doesn't negotiate that's even what's going on. So Stahl tried to bait Dimon and see if he would trash Trump's tariffs. And you know what he told her? He said, you ought to read The Art of the Deal, which is the New York Times bestseller authored by Trump. And then he proceeded to explain the obvious to an idiot that tariffs are a tool and the threat of them is working for our benefit. He's putting America first, which is a crazy concept, I know, to put your own people first. But it is refreshing to see competence on the comeback. Playing opposite day, remember in 2020, when they said that the adults were going to be back in charge? That was scary, wasn't it? When you recognized the projection, when you knew the opposite of everything they said was the truth, Trump's going to start wars, there's going to be chaos, the world is laughing at us, Biden is empathetic. I could come up with more. I remember this. I got a call in October 2020. You know how you hear people say all the time that, like, who are the people out there answering calls from pollsters that I have never gotten a call from a pollster? Well, that's not something I can say because I actually got a call from a woman about a month before the 2020 election. And she asked who I planned to vote for. Well, first she asked if I planned to vote at all. And I told her yes. That I planned to vote, but I was undecided because I wanted to see if she'd give me a pitch. And she did. She wasn't neutral. No, not if Hitler is running against her favored candidate. So first she asked me what would keep me from voting for Biden. And I said, you know, I'm a little concerned about his cognitive decline. I mean, it's easy to see, and I'm afraid everybody can see it. And she didn't miss a beat. She said, do you mean his stutter? Is that what you're concerned about, his stutter? And I said, could you send me a clip from when he ran for president back in 1988 where he was stuttering? And then I asked, why did he drop out of the race in 88? And it was at that point she realized that I knew too much and she was wasting her time. And she hurried off the phone. But what would be another one? All the economists that say Trump's policies will bring record inflation. Or Trump's a racist as we implement racist DEI policies across the country. Dr. Jill saying, what did Trump do? And she got the crowd to say, lie. And then she tried to say he had dementia. I remember she was saying, Trump can't put two sentences together. Tell us more, Doc, so we know what you're dealing with behind closed doors. So bring back shame. If you lied to the country for 4 years, if you knowingly perpetrated a hoax, whether it's the Fine People hoax, Russian collusion hoax, the suckers and losers hoax, the laptop, the drink and bleach hoax, the unarmed insurrection to delay the vote count, preventing what they believe to be an insurrection. And those who tried to manipulate the public should be shamed, is what I'm trying to say. Bring back shame. How many of those who attempted a communist revolution in America have read Orwell? Something I've also talked about was how it's near pointless to talk politics with the leftists nowadays because they don't know anything, because our information sources are so siloed, our news sources. I mean, they're siloed to the point where leftists don't know anything. And depending on how narrow their minds are, you might be able to educate them a little bit, but that normally will not do any good. If you're a facts over feelings kind of person, they're more than likely a feelings over facts type. Unknowingly, of course, that's not something they acknowledge, but you'd have to somehow change their emotions, which is very hard to do. Evidenced by their responses to hearing something you know to be true that they've never heard before. They don't open their mind suddenly and say, oh, that's not something I've considered. I've never seen that happen. Something I noticed in my 20s is that those who would poo-poo Ayn Rand had never read Atlas Shrugged. That didn't stop them from having an opinion. And of course, those who feel the strongest generally know the least. They don't care to know the other side's argument before drawing their own conclusions. You remember the Phil Donahue episode with Milton Friedman as his guest? I'll include a link in the show notes. Donahue says to Friedman, he says, when you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots. Or did I say that backwards? When you see so few haves and so many have-nots. No, I said that right. When you see the greed and concentration of power, have you ever had a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed is a good idea to run on? And Friedman, who's a genius, he says to him, first of all, tell me, is there some society that you know that doesn't run on greed? Do you think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's always the other guy who's greedy. The world, he said, the world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaucrats, government bureaus. Einstein didn't come up with his theory on some order from a bureaucrat, nor did Henry Ford, this is him, this is what he said, nor did Henry Ford revolutionize the automobile industry by way of bureaucrats giving orders. He said, in the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the grinding poverty that we're discussing, the only cases in recorded history that they've come out of poverty are where they've had capitalism and free trade. And the societies who are worse off are those that depart from that. And Donahue says, but the system seems to reward not virtue as much as an ability to manipulate the system. To which Friedman says, And what does reward virtue? Do you think a Soviet commissar rewards virtue? Do you think a Hitler rewards virtue? I'm sorry, pardon me, excuse me. But do U.S. presidents reward virtue? Is it true that political self-interest is somehow nobler than economic self-interest? I think you're taking a lot of things for granted. Tell me, where in the world are we going to find these angels who are going to reorganize society for us? I don't even trust you to do that. It's a great clip. You got to see it. Let's do more Gerwinder, what he calls useful concepts for 2025. I did three of them last time, so let's start at number four, negative partisanship. Many people's political views revolve not around what they support, but what they oppose. They're always fighting against something rather than for something, and the constant focus on what they hate makes them nasty and miserable. God, is that true? Have you seen the stats on how many awfuls are struggling with mental health issues? It's more than half. It's a majority, which explains so much, right? As I've been saying, the U.S. has been run for too long by crazy women and feminine men, which of course creates hard times. And then you have to hope that your fellow countrymen come together to elect a strong leader to bring back the good times. We've seen this cycle since nation states became a thing back in the 16th century. All right, next one, enshittification. Online services start out serving users. When they have enough users, they switch to serving advertisers or shareholders at the expense of users. For example, Google search initially showed you what you search for, but now largely shows you what it wants you to see. We've all experienced that, right? Many people didn't realize what a godsend social media was in its early days, back when you could bombard your Facebook friends with quasi-advertising or actual advertising, like three or four times a day, and they were pretty much guaranteed to see it. Because everything was in chronological order back then, like whoever posted, if somebody posted 5 minutes later, that's the next post you would see. Well, now users see your Facebook posts and think, he won't even know if I saw this or not, and therefore don't feel obligated to like or comment on your post. And then with regard to Google search, which, by the way, the Perplexity app is what I've seen a lot of people go to. I haven't downloaded it yet, but I've heard Perplexity AI is much better than Google search. Anyway, I think Google search is similar to AI in a lot of ways. Like, people who try to predict how AI will change the world, they're mostly just guessing. Because of all the fortune tellers and palm readers in the world, what none of them predicted about the internet was that search would be the most useful part of the World Wide Web. And I believe AI will be the same. Like, nobody can predict the future. And therefore, we're clueless in which ways AI will impact society, both positively and negatively. Next one, Dawkins' Law of the Conservation of Difficulty. The easier an academic field, the more it will try to preserve its difficulty by using complex jargon. Physicists use simple terms if possible, while postmodern theorists try to complexify their discipline by writing like this. And he gives an example. This is his example. The move from a structuralist account in which capital is understood to structure social relations in relatively homologous ways to a view of hegemony in which power relations are subject to repetition, convergence, and rearticulation brought the question of temporality into the thinking of structure and marketed, I won't read all of this, then he goes on to talk about Althusserian theory that takes structural totalities as theoretical objects, and it goes on. So brevity isn't their strong suit, is what he's trying to say. You know who else does that besides academia? Lawyers. That's where the term legalese comes from. And there have been a lot of theories as to why laws are written as difficult to understand as they are. And one of them is it justifies them charging high fees. I called into a radio station one time to a guest host, so the regular host was out that day, and I asked him a real estate related question. And his answer to my question wasn't helpful at all. I could have gotten better information just Googling and had Googled. But when I was talking to their screener beforehand, he asked for my email address. And remember from a previous episode, where I talked about the importance of collecting email addresses. Well, I thought that's what he was doing, and I expected them to start spamming me. That was not why they wanted my email address. No, when we got off the phone, that MF attorney sent me a bill for $300 for his time that day. Sorry, Esquire. That's not something we agreed to. You know how people say it's not the money, it's the principle that I disagree with? You hear that all the time. Oh, it's not the money, it's the principle. But whenever there's money involved, it's always about the money, not the principle. I don't agree with that. Although it makes sense in this instance, because I do believe the advice I got wasn't worth $300, nor is he worth $6,000 an hour? Because we only talk for 5 minutes. And I think it's especially egregious when a lawyer does that, because the layperson receiving that email would probably pay it out of fear of being sued. Who can sue you with more ease than an attorney? Even a form letter from an attorney, like on lawyer letterhead, where they have commas and four names at the top. That works. That gets people moving a lot of times. I've asked an attorney friend to send letters on my behalf before, and it works more times than not. Or even CCing your attorney buddy on emails. That can be helpful, because the recipient sees the @Rackham and Rubenstein and two more trial lawyers' email address, and it lights a fire underneath them. So, yeah, the reasons for legalese could be plenty. One, justifying high fees, but it could also be they might just be trying to ingratiate themselves to their peers, or simply impress their peers. Similar to the semi-scammy peer review process in academia. And I say that because although getting something published in peer-reviewed journals is considered the gold standard, that is no guarantee of quality. And a lot of their shit gets debunked. Or the funniest example, probably this is the best example of how research studies had gone off the rails. James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose, they submitted a study into it was some feminist journal about, their study was on doggy-on-doggy sexual assault in dog parks. And it was accepted and published. Only in Portland. He was a professor at Portland State University. Another reason for legalese could be that lawyers are like fish who don't know they're in water. They don't even notice that their writing is so hard to understand. I see this in people who, you know, the guy who tries to be the smartest guy in the room in meetings. They're obviously not others directed, because they're so verbose, trying to show how smart they are. Which is the most self-serving thing you could do in a meeting, because good communication is writing or speaking in a way that your audience can grasp. That way they come away with new knowledge. You've provided value to them. They're more informed. So you want what you share to be digestible to your target audience. Not to mention, it just shows a total disregard for the valuable time of meeting attendees. Whereas someone who values others, somebody who's other-directed, they're going to respect and appreciate others' time by way of preparation and being concise, by listening to others' concerns. And if you're going to talk up in a meeting, you want to be economical with your words and think about maximizing the impact of each word spoken, like I'm trying to do now. I once worked with the smartest guy in every room, or so he thought. And his verbal tics were louder than the content of what he was saying. But what else? But that was back in the Obama days, back when no longer made you sound like a dummy. It made you sound like the second coming. Any other theories for legalese you can think of? I know. So this is a theory I'd probably put my money on if I were forced to do so. And it has to do with money. If you've ever worked with a contract, like a contract of any length, which I do regularly, the Texas Real Estate Commission promulgated lease for my tenants, that's 14 pages long. No, it's not. The contract was developed by the Texas Association of Realtors, TAR, but same difference. And it's 14 pages, and that's before any amendments are added. So the last thing a lawyer wants to do is rewrite a contract. I don't even like reading the whole contract to clients. Who'd want to spend their time rewriting a contract? Rewriting all the laws and legal documents, of which there are many. And, you know, that could take years. Better to spend your time on the radio answering questions in 5-minute chunks. Anyway, yeah, another industry that's guilty of overcomplicating things is wealth management, because it's hard to make money saying spend less than you make, invest automatically, and diversify your portfolio, hold for a long period of time. So they complicate it. It's crazy. Let me talk about the fires real quick, because I talked about why DEI must die. Maybe this will be DEI must die part two. We have these fires destroying much of the California coast. I read where it's the size. The fires are the size. They've consumed an area the size of Manhattan times 2.5. Destroyed. And we all kind of knew that what we... after New Orleans, I think we knew, and after the Secret Service, and after so many other things, I think we knew what we'd see when those responsible came forward for the press conference. Nothing but DEI hires, more than likely. It's hard to prove. Unless they've stated in their policy that it's their foremost mission. And you might say, how do you know Karen Bass is a DEI hire? Or how do you know that the three fat lesbians in charge of all these important areas dealing with safety and protection are DEI hires? Well, one, what are the odds of having three lesbians in those spots? If you do the math, like Statistics 101, you know that the likelihood of, well, let's start with a coin flip. So what is the odds of it flipping heads? 50-50, right? So that'd be like the same odds of a human being male or female. Well, before you flip the coin even once, what are the odds of the coin flipping? Like if you decide before both flips that the coin's going to be heads, what are the odds of the coin flip landing on heads twice in a row? To get your answer, you just multiply 50% chance of heads on the first flip times 50% chance of heads on the second flip, and you get your odds of 25%. Now, do the same math for a lesbian. Well, lesbians and gays make up somewhere around 2 to 3% of the population. And by the way, if you want a fun exercise, ask a girl in her 20s what percentage of the population they believe is gay. You will get answers ranging from 30 to 40%. At least that's the range I've gotten. And it's easy to see why they would think that, right? Because homosexuals tend to be very vocal. They're very prideful. They take a lot of pride in who arouses them. So, yeah. I mean, there's a reason the responsibility of safety and protection for the community throughout human history has fallen to men. And people don't understand how bad DEI is, but it's bound to lead to the downfall of society. Like, I'll just use me as an example. My last name is D'Antonio, which is, my ancestors are from Italy. If the corporate world decided that they were only going to hire those of Italian ancestry, do you know how much that would narrow their prospective pool of applicants? Like, you've taken the male-female, divided it into 50. Okay, we're only going to hire males. Okay, so then you have to eliminate all the Irish and all Asians of every country in Asia, all lesbians. You get the idea. So you narrow it down to maybe like 1-2% of the population, and then you have to choose from that pool. That's what DEI does. You're not going to get the most competent people because you're choosing from such a narrow set of people. It has nothing to do with race. I hope that's clear. All right, let's finish with kids say the darndest thing. So I told my daughter we were going upstairs in 5 minutes. It was right around bedtime. And she said, okay. And 1 minute later, she's pacing around the room. And so my wife asked, why do you keep walking around the room like that? And she says, I have to go potty, but I don't want to use my 5 minutes to go potty. So I say, go potty. I'll give you an extra 2 minutes. And she looks at me like she's contemplating whether that's a good deal for her or not. And I say, do you have to make poo-poo? And she says, yes. And I said, well, go make poo-poo and come back and tell me about it. So she smiles at me and scampers off to the bedroom. But when she comes out, she runs to me and gives me a high five and says, I went poo-poo in the potty, which reminded me of a really funny story from when we were in Europe last year. We were on a train and my little girl was sitting next to me and we were having what felt like an adult conversation. Like she was processing what I said quickly. She would respond with full coherent sentences. And then she asked to be excused like an adult would from the dinner table to go to the bathroom. And I sat there, I was just looking out the window at the Hungarian countryside or whatever. And I'm beaming with pride. And all of a sudden I hear this little girl's voice scream so the whole train could hear, I went poo-poo in the potty. Thank y'all for tuning in. Oh, last thing I want to say. We are going to go through with the inaugural overseas man retreat. The deadline to sign up was supposed to be MLK Day, but I will extend it a couple days for those listening who are interested in joining us. It is free for those in my coaching program, but we do have a few guys that are attending who will be paying to attend. So, all right, folks, know that I'm grateful for each and every one of you listening. I hope your 25 is off to a beautiful start. We're expecting 4 to 6 inches of snow in Houston this week. If we get it, you might catch me outside. How about that? Building a snowman. If it had come a few days earlier, we might be building a snow transsexual, I guess. We dodged a bullet. We dodged that like a butler bullet. All right, stay warm and cozy, friends, and God bless.